When I look at the mirror, all I see is flaws. But when I look into the mirror, all I see is a boss.
Mirror, mirror on the wall.
I started out as a musician.
It's me again. I bet you already knew that, so just go ahead and show me my reflection today. But
this is how I got into poetry. I was robbed. I was so mad at God and just laid down at the spot where I was robbed, and I was talking to him like, how could he allow this to happen? Then the following day, now as I was going to school, I was just saying a prayer to God, how I was feeling in my heart. Then I noticed it had some rhythm to it. It has been like a therapy tool for me. Creative goes through that phase of being paid with exposure. In the beginning, I didn't even know that people get paid to do this.
Afro Millennial, the podcast, is a casual sound space for millennial creatives in Uganda and across the African continent to share their life stories. The podcast discusses a healthy balance of their professions, passions, and personal lives, and offers a bit of perspective and lessons from their life experiences. Come on, let's have fun.
We signed up for Chit Chats only to log out of Real Talks. We gave of our hearts for hearts instead. Love found us, but we placed it in the wrong palms. We stretched out our hands in the dark, expecting the pretty smile of the day to hold us. How stupid we were. How naive. But forgive us. We never saw the thorns in the rose bed. Forgive us. We never heard the cracked voice in the long tails. Pardon us. We never felt the regular emotions in the bold text. Pardon us, please. Our eyes were blinded by the long face. The lies burdened the truth we expected, so we begged for more lies, crossed more lines, cried all the time, soaked our pillows with tears till we drowned in them. We wished for death in our breaths, we prayed for death on altar calls, we met death on our beds, but he too played us. Life threatened him, I guess. Now I understand why Mama said we are invisible, that we come from heights that eagles only dream of, that we are made from DNAs that fought hyenas and cheetahs, that we owe nobody an explanation for wanting to live, to make baby steps, to become, to try, to fail, to change, to breathe again. We learned how to fly with Icarus wings. We taught ourselves how to hide in plain sight. So we come out at night donning bright colors. Now they spot us from afar and remark how glowing we look. They can't hear our cries. They can't see our scars. The loud fashion blocks them from hearing the silence of our hearts. We got played, but like a ball, we bounced back. Now we let them keep the scores as we smash our goals. Mama taught us not to waste what we have, so we keep the remaining love for ourselves. We pick up pieces of our hearts and stitch them together in love. Now we laugh because we can. We crawl because we can. We walk because we can. We rise because we can. We fly because we can.
God damn! Sheesh!
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Afro Millennial, the podcast. This is the second season. And with me in the studio today, I have a big deal in every sense of the word. He's a poet. He's a philanthropist. He says he's not yet to a level where he's been a philanthropist, but we'll find that out in a bit.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, all the way in Nairobi, Kenya. In Nairobi, Kenya. Storm Wabuko, welcome.
Thank you.
How are you doing?
You can say all the way from Busia.
Ah.
I love to identify more with Busia. Nairobi, we are just passers-by. We came here to make money and go back home.
You're tourists.
Yes, so we are all the way from Busia, Kenya, but living in Nairobi.
Are you from the Kenyan side of the Busia or like the Ugandan side of the
Kenyan
Busia?
Kenyan side. But rumor has it that even the Kenyan side was Ugandan, so...
No, that's not a rumor. There's statistics on that, man. You're Ugandan.
I'm Kenyan by birth, maybe Ugandan by faith.
You're
maybe.
Ugandan Who in knows? A sense. Yeah. Before we delve into it with Storm, we'll just give a moment here for feedback from our previous episode. Mm-hmm. Let's get to hear what the listeners thought on what Edwin Currier shared about, you know, his role in the influencer market and the digital marketing space of Kenya.
Hi, my name is Anna Fiska. So So the last episode, the one with Nigel Edwin Courier. So one of the things that I really, really liked and what stood out for me was the part where he talks about struggling with making comparisons and overcoming that. It's something that I have struggled with and I'm sort of like working through. So when he talked about it, it was very helpful tips. You know, it was nice to hear from someone with like his level of experience, just talking about how, you know, they sort of struggled with making comparisons when they're younger. And, you know, now they've overcome that. And, you know, they've come up with all these workable ways of, you know, working around that. It really spoke to me because it's something I sort of struggle with sometimes, you know, make comparisons with people your own age. I could really connect with him on that part. And I loved Nigel for, you know, just sharing that part about himself and being so candid and just letting us in. And it was just a fun episode. So thank you, Anthony.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Offrey Millennial, the podcast.
Thanks, everyone. Thanks for all your comments. Thanks for all your feedback. You know, it means the world to us. You know, it goes to tell us that someone out there is listening and someone out there, you know, relates to the content that we create, which is literally why we do this every single day. Now, the philanthropist.
The pressure.
I keep misidentifying you. So
look, maybe you're manifesting. So let's just go with it.
Exactly. The law of attraction. You need to stop. You know, you need to stop saying no when I call you that.
I have repented. I have repented.
Yes. So philanthropist.
Yes.
If you could, in your own words, define Storm Mwabuko, who would that be?
I can't define Storm Mwabuko. I am just...
You're infinite. You're the unknown.
I am who I am.
You're the known unknown.
But right now, Storm is a poet.
Uh-huh.
Storm is a creative. And Storm...
Very creative, I must add.
Yeah, Storm is someone who is passionate about highlighting what he's going through in my body and outside my body. So that means what's going on in my head and in my surrounding, in the environment. So yeah, that's me.
super. Tell us a little bit about your poetry journey. How did you morph into that? Is it something you started doing, you know, as soon as you were kicked out of the world? You're like, AIDS, the world is full of AIDS. Yeah. And, you know, all those primary school poems.
So what did I started getting involved in the creative space, I think, since I was in nursery school in Kenya. It was nursery school during my time. Right now I hear it's kindergarten. God performed with my school, you know, during festivals, music. Then primary school did the same, music, drama, acting. But I started out as a musician. Because of my cousin. So I don't have brothers.
Yeah.
The only brothers I have are my cousins, two of them, and I really look up to one of them because he's the eldest. And he got into music and I want to be everything this man is. So I started out with music. And so there are some lyrics that I'd write and I'm like, this, it doesn't fit anywhere because there's a certain rhyme scheme that's to be added to music, a certain flow. So those ones, I'd put them aside. Then in 2013, this is how I got into poetry. I was robbed. 2013 January, the same year. 2013 January, I was robbed, same date. 2014, the same date. So it was like I was celebrating an anniversary.
There's robbed. A pattern.
Yeah, on the same date. So on 2014, I was so mad at God and just laid down at the spot where I was robbed and I was talking to him, like how could he allow this to happen? Then the following day, now January 16th, as I was going to school, I was just saying a prayer to God. How I was feeling in my heart. Then I noticed it had some rhythm to it. So I got to school, wrote down everything, then went to my pastor and told him, I feel like I have something I need to share. I don't know why, but can you listen to it? Then he gave me permission. Then after sharing, when I left the stage, now that's when my friends came to tell me and ask me questions like, when did you start doing poetry? How long have you been doing it? And I'm like, boy, what? Yes, spoken word poetry. I'm like, what is that? They're like, what you did, that is what spoken poetry is. So now from 2014, I've been learning and I'm still learning different elements to it and how I can express myself better.
Super. Wow. That's an interesting way to, you know, address conflict. Some of us are like, yo, call up the police, call up investigators. You guys are just like, canine dogs. You're like, robbery, oh, robbery.
We are in Africa. 9 out of 10 times, nothing will happen if you go to the police. So you go to God.
Beautiful. So from that experience, do you think that helped you to like outlet what you were feeling about the whole situation there?
Yeah, because now getting to dive more into poetry helped me to realize and that I can express myself through a different medium. Because naturally, I call myself a professional introvert. And I keep to myself a lot. So
what's that? What's a professional introvert?
That's the highest level of being an introvert. I keep to myself a lot. So there are things that happen that I'm not supposed to keep inside my heart because now they end up poisoning me. But I don't have the strength to look for someone and talk about these things. So getting to bump into poetry, I think it opened my eyes to a different medium that I can express myself.
Yeah.
And now channel my energy through that as I look for the energy to also look for someone to talk to. So it has been like a therapy tool for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Super. And you know, looking at poetry from a career sense, how have you since progressed from, you know, rapping for the clergy to spitting for the clergy to where you are now?
Making it sound so exotic. I feel like every creative, not just a poet, every creative goes through that phase of being paid with exposure.
you had a go at that.
The exposure I've had, this camera cannot handle. So there's that moment. And even in the beginning, I didn't even know that people get paid to do this.
Yeah.
So it was just for the love or expressing myself. There's a time my mentor called me and sent me to go and perform at a church, now my current church. But back then I was in a different church. And he gave me 5,000 Kenyan shillings. That's like 50 USD.
Mm-hmm.
Is it 50? Yeah, 50 USD. And I was like, what is this for? He told me, for the performance you did. Like, people get paid.
You're getting paid for this?
How? So it's been a journey.
Yeah.
And also, right now in the market, the Kenyan market, poetry is still a baby. So we are still on the journey of it being accepted as something that people get paid for.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been, I think, 7 or 8 years, 2014, a journey of just making it known out there that there's this art and this is the power that it can do. So what I have been doing is leaning more towards the corporate, diversifying myself towards the corporate, because the corporate is the one that has money. Our fans have money, but not the kind of money that we want to sustain us. Yeah, that has been my direction, going towards corporate events and also diversifying it into other courses that I'm passionate about.
Mm-hmm.
So like now I teach poetry in the juvenile prison. Oh. So now I'm still doing poetry, but now looking at how or where can I channel it towards.
Yeah. That's very interesting. You know, teaching poetry in juvenile prison. Like, what informed that? Is that like a gig that you got along the way? Is that something that you're doing out of passion? Is that the charity arm of what you do?
It came out of passion. And this passion is I went through, like, from age 12 or 15, I went through some terrible times. So I was molested by a male family friend. And so that, from that experience, I was like, I would want to do the best I can to make sure that kids are protected and they are given their full human rights as kids.
Yeah.
And so I didn't know that is what was fueling it. Mm-hmm. Me, I was just like, I have loved kids from when I was very young. Plus also the fact that my parents didn't give me a brother, or God did not bless them with a brother to give to me.
Yeah.
So I have always been drawn towards, you know, the boys and male friends.
Like a big brother figure?
Yeah, I want to fill up that gap. And if they are young, I want to like be their big brother and protect them.
Mm-hmm,
so I was in a conversation with my friend and he told me he had been going there like an year before me, because I started in 2020.
Mm-hmm.
He started going there in 2019. So by the time he was telling me about this juvenile prison, I was like, this is what I've been looking for.
Because
I'd been looking for somewhere to serve. My love language is serving. So I'd been looking for somewhere to serve. So when he told me about this juvenile, I was like, next time you're going, you take me.
Mm-hmm.
So I got there, I asked them for a day that I can be going and serving.
Yeah.
And it was only natural that I'd use poetry because that is what I have in my hands. Poetry, art. So it was just natural that I would be teaching them that. And also they love it. And most of them are from neighborhoods that are more into the art. So it was somehow easy for us to relate.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Beautiful. So and how have you seen it take effect on the kids that you're doing the poetry with? Like, have you seen it, you know, inform their personal growth in a sense? Have you seen it transform them in any way?
Ah, yeah. Huge impact.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because one of the huge thing that you are dealing with, or when I got there, was self-esteem, self-identity,
mm-hmm.
self-worth. Most of these kids are coming from the slums. Some are even street kids who got themselves into the prison. So the self-esteem is already low.
Yeah.
There's a lack of identity because
mm-hmm.
they've been looking for an identity and unfortunately got into the wrong groups, which now got them to the prison. And, you know, just the self-worth. So through poetry, the same thing that happened to me, they found a voice to express themselves, what they are thinking in their mind, the lows that they've been having in the prison, the highs that they've been having, now reflecting on the decisions, and some are regretting. And now through the poems that they're writing, it's like a message to themselves and a message to their friends who are not in prison and what they have been going through. And it's been amazing to witness the transformation. The first day that I went there, they were somehow closed off.
Yeah.
It was hard for them to start expressing walls themselves. Walls
up and everything.
Yeah. but now giving them this tool that they don't have to tell me directly, but they can tell their pen and paper, and then we'll read it or we'll just listen to them.
Yeah.
They started getting the confidence, and there's been a huge change ever since we started that program. Some have even been released from prison and they're doing great outside.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's been one of the successes and things that make me happy.
And have they kept contact with you after prison?
Yes. Before they leave, we ask for who can we contact once you are out.
Okay.
Because now every day that we have sessions, I ask, so who has a court hearing the following week? So who is going to be released, so that we know, give us your contact, your, of course, parents' contacts or guardians, because now they don't have registered phones. So we keep contact.
Actually, not realized juvenile prison was like a thing here, because, you know, back home in Uganda, we have like detention centers, but, you know.
Yeah. That was me before 29. And the funny thing is that I was living just next to the prison, and I never knew that prison is just next in my neighborhood.
Yeah.
And I never knew there are kids. I've seen it in movies, of course, the American movies, but that one, we're always like, that is America.
Exactly.
They are messed up. They need help.
And I need to be sure we're still in Kenya. Like,
yeah. Then we go there like, this thing is real. And now the interesting thing about the committee prison where I volunteer or work at is that we have approved schools where it's in Kabete, where some are taken there and there. They have systems, programs, they're in school, all that. But in committee, it's like you're there and now it's you and your God.
Mm-hmm.
So they are kids. They don't know how the law works. Even myself, I'm an adult, but I'm still learning how does the law work. And some of them, their parents don't want to care about them. So we have kids who are there and the only hope is their parents, and the parents want nothing to do with them.
Yeah.
Or they are street kids, so they have nothing and no one to call. So now you find that maybe someone's case, they would have maybe paid bail and left, or maybe it was a dismissible case, but they don't know they are kids. So now it has to take someone from the outside to come and listen to their case and like, okay, so how can we go about this? Because once they are there, you know, they're supposed to be in school.
Yeah.
Yes, some of them have done wrong. We can't ignore that. But of course, in the prison, we have the innocent, we have the guilty, and we are not guilty.
Yeah.
But even the ones that are guilty, there are ways to go about it according to the law.
There's a turnaround for them. Yeah. I agree. Well, I think it's really, really powerful what you're doing with those kids there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's also a way of you to like to ripple effect your gifts down to, you know, like a smaller generation or a younger generation.
True.
T- take us a little bit through your creative process. You have performances. I saw you. You have those weeks where you're booked out. Like, this is my schedule this week. Monday I'll be here. Tuesday I'll be here. Wednesday I'll be here. Thursday. And it's like a mix, you know, like Monday I'll be with the school. Tuesday I'll be with the juvie prison. Wednesday I'll be performing at this, you know, corporate launch. Thursday. Yeah. So it's like your audience has like very, 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 you know, like multiple segments. Yes. So how do you... What's your creative process like? Do you tailor content for every single audience, or do you generate content that sort of cuts across and applies to everyone?
First of all, the first audience is me, the creative.
Ah.
The first audience is always you, the creative.
Yeah.
So you're always creating for yourself. Then the next one, the other people. So most of my pieces are just myself, these things burning inside my heart. Yeah. And like, I need to address this. Might be something I'm going through or something I've seen someone go through, and the best way I can handle it is just write it down and express it through poetry.
Yeah.
So most of my pieces are like that. But now I tailor make depending on the audience. Like for corporate events, they have different themes. They have different things that are going to address in different events. So that one I have to like write a new piece for that specific event, and to also be part of the lineup and part of the flow.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to go there with a piece celebrating parties and all this, and we are there to talk about sad and deep things.
Yeah.
You know, so I just want to be in the mood. And now for the schools also, now we have dynamics of the age groups.
Yeah.
I can't bring them mental depression poems. They are kids. I don't want to depress them. I want them to see life for what it is, but also package it in a way that they can consume. I don't want to burden them. So it depends with where I'm going to present.
Yeah.
But most of my pieces are just me expressing myself. And I've realized that most of my themes are on mental health, wellness, social justice, human rights.
Yeah.
Yeah. And of course, God has to be in the mix.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A very spiritual guy.
Yeah.
I think that's amazing. You mentioned a mentor somewhere.
Yes.
You've had a mentor your way. Could you let us in a little bit more on that? Like, what's that been like? What exactly have they mentored you in along the way? And what have you picked up?
Yeah. So, of course, in Africa, the child is not one person's responsibility. We are owned by the community.
Yeah.
So there are so many people who have influence different aspects of my life, even my personal life, let alone the creative life.
Yeah.
But there's one that has remained constant. He's called El Safan Njora. This is like my father in the creative industry. Yeah. I used to admire him even before coming to Nairobi. I'd watch him in there's programs that he would be in on TV, and I'm like, this guy is so creative. I'd love to meet him one day.
Yeah.
Now in 2014, now when I started discovering poetry, a friend of mine is called Valence. I call him V. He was like,
it's called Violence.
Valence. Ah. Hey, Violence, like, for way.
You have a friend called Violence. What's going on?
Sorry, I've had a flu, so maybe my tongue is slippery. It's Valence.
I began looking around like, is he here? Is Violence here?
Beware. It's Valence, but I call him V.
Yeah.
So he's the one who took my hand and said, I'm going to take you to all the poetry events I know. Because I think he saw something in me before I even saw it. And he was like, this thing needs to be nurtured. So he took me to my first poetry event. And the event was being run by this guy, El Safan Njora. It was called Eve of Poetry. So now in Eve of Poetry, we were a bunch of poets and musicians too, because we would have music breaks. And El Safan Njora molded everyone who was coming to that Eve of Poetry. So now we are called EOP babies, Eve of Poetry. Now he would tell us, like, do this. We would have rehearsals. So we'd have events once a month. But now before we get to the show day, we'd have rehearsals. We have writing camps and tell us, we are going to tackle this theme this month. Go write next week, come. We go through it. Now everyone gives feedback on, you can add this, you can remove this. Now perform it like this. And it was a great experience to go through, because this is something new I was getting into, and to get someone to shape me through all that, it was amazing. So even right now, years later, like, he's the one who took me to my first paid gig. So every time I'm called for a gig,
it was him that gave you the
it was him
the, It was 5K, right?
It was 5K. It was 5K. Yeah. Of course, now, I think he was asked if he can bring anyone to perform. And now he just called me like, Sandra, I need you to go to this place.
Yeah.
Like, I will go. Now, I performed. The next week, he called me and like, okay, there's this.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now he's the one who told me people are being paid. Yeah. But he saw that. Even last year, he whenever he gets a gig that I can go to, he calls me and like, you go there and tell them to give you this amount.
Yeah.
Because I'm not good at pricing. I think most creatives struggle with that, putting a price, and we end up doing things for free and we suffer. But I always call him, I'm like, there's this and this and this gig, how much should I charge? Now he takes me through the process, break it down like this, and don't go below this. So even right now, I still go back to him and ask, even when I am down, even personally, and like, this is what I'm going through and I feel this and this, and just shares words of encouragement. So there's that. And of course, there are other people who have influenced, like who I am, like my role model, Octopizzo. I look at what he's doing, like, I need to do that. He's working in the community. I need to plug myself in the community. Yeah. But El Safa Njora, that's one figure that remains constant.
It was interesting that you mentioned the fact that, you know, creatives struggle with attaching price tags to their craft.
Yeah.
Because it cues in my next question. Actually, I feel like you're looking into my questions now.
I'm so excited. I can't even see.
So, poetry is a budding industry. It's something that's just like growing, not just here, but even back at home in Uganda.
Yeah,
Probably the continent and worldwide. What measures have you put in place to nail the business sense of your craft? I know you said you engage the corporate sector quite a bit. What do you have in place to make sure that, you know, you don't get ripped off and you get value for what you're selling, you know, what you're presenting, and things of the sort? You know, a few tips that growing poets might want to keep in mind as they come up.
First of all, I make sure that I have, in quotes, mean friends, those who don't joke. So that, because I know I can be swayed.
Yeah.
So that when I see it coming, I go back to them and they talk to me with tough love.
Yeah.
They're like, you can't do this and do this. And like, don't come back here if you accept that amount.
Okay.
So now I go back to my clients, afraid of going back to my friends and telling them.
It's like a poet community or personal friends?
Not even poet community, because poet community also are struggling the same things. So, I have to look for someone outside this poet community and someone who is not a creative, who is like, we are looking at the business mind. Because if I go back to my creatives, I'll find them struggling with the same things.
Right.
So now we are...
They'll make you settle for less.
So I look for people outside.
Yeah.
Of course, there's El Safa Njora, the same guy. That's the one I call. I'm like, there's this and this. And also, I feel like he has grown so much into it that he can't be swayed, and he sees the value of someone before them seeing it.
Yeah.
So now when I call him, he even says words that... Before I even ask, because now he's always like, you need to know your worth.
Yeah.
I have seen you grow through this, this, and this, and this, and he has seen my journey. It's like, all that effort you've put in, it takes time. So someone needs to pay for that time. Someone needs to pay for the experience you've gone through for you to write that piece that you're going to perform. So he even speaks, it's not just about money, but also speaking positively and speaking life into me. Like, you're such a dope poet, you see? You are a dope creative. And for people to experience this, yes, there's passion, but you need also to live a life. So he's always speaks into this and also breaks it down so that it's easy. For instance, you know, it can be difficult even for the corporate when you say they want you for a gig and you just say, maybe give me $500. For them, maybe they're like, hey, for what? You're just coming to speak.
Right.
They don't see it. And when they say that, you might start looking at yourself. You're like, hey, by the way, it's true. I'm just going. It's just 5 minutes of my time and then I'll go back. But you don't realize for the 20 plus years you've been living, that has been content for you to write this, the skill that you've been harnessing, all that.
Yeah.
So Njora tells me, you know, break it down. And I've found it's been easy. If I'm going for a performance, I break down the amount. Like, you're going to pay me for the performance, for the writing, for the costume, because I need to put on clothes to come there. There's transport, there's research materials. So now breaking it even helps the corporate to see, oh, so this is what we are paying for.
Because
now if you just give them a solid figure, they can't see it. Yeah, so I think that has been working. Looking for friends who are no jokes and running to my mentor.
These friends, do they never ask you for free passes to your shows or anything?
For their old gigs?
For your gig, do they come to
you? Oh, they don't have to ask. There are people that don't have to ask. That's lifetime, any gig that I have.
They have lifetime access.
They have a lifetime access. They don't have to ask. And even if they want to pay, you're coming. Yeah.
Ah, so you put them in a place where they are coming, whether they want to pay or they
want to. These are people that their money won't match up to what they are feeding into my life.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter the amount of money they want to bring. Can be millions, but it won't match up.
So they are your social capital in a sense.
Yeah.
They come for free, but they pay every single day.
Day they pay. Because when I am down, they have to make sure that I am encouraged.
Yeah. We're almost done with you, Storm.
Sheesh, but part one.
But are there any lessons that you've picked up along your journey that you'd like to share? Like, if there was one or two things you probably would have done differently about how you've come up, can you place a finger on those?
Maybe looked for these people who feed into my life way earlier. Because like I said, I'm an introvert. So there are many opportunities that I lose because I can't just find the strength to open my mouth and talk to people or go after it and feeling sorry for being a certain way. So maybe I would have done that earlier. But right now, I think we all need someone in our lives, and not just creative side, but personally, your personal life. You need that one person or two people, or three people, at least one person that you can run to and share anything. They might not even understand or feel your pain, but they are there to listen. We need that person because we are not islands. We are being raised in communities. So we can't live alone and seclude ourselves from people. So we need that person, and we need to believe in ourselves. You know, our self-worth, you really, really need to believe in yourself that you are enough, that you're not lacking in any way.
Right.
You are worthy of anything, the good that is coming to you, because I feel like our minds and the devil plays tricks on us, and he feeds on that when we are down and we are questioning ourselves and doubting ourselves. So you need to know every day that you are enough, you are complete. Yes, there are some things you need to work on, like maybe if we have anger issues, but you are complete the way you are. That's the package that God sent to us. And the fact that you are working on other things in your life means pieces, that you're
nothing.
There's nothing mixing. We are just adjusting
things
in our life so that, you know, like our clothes, we have the best clothes. We buy the best shoes, but we need to wash them every day. We're not washing because now they have become bogus, but we need to adjust it so that it becomes brand new to us.
My very last question to you actually is me queuing you in. Tell us a little bit about your EP. Okay, not a little bit. Tell us everything about your EP.
Everything about my EP, they'll get it when you listen to the EP and when you buy the book, because it's an EP and a book.
It's an EP and a book.
Yeah, it was one project titled Mirror, but now it was poetry in music, in words, pictures and audio.
Yeah.
So words, I have a book. Audio, I have an EP. Mm-hmm. Pictures, there's pictures in the book. It's all poetry. Just
I come like with an album.
Oh, that's a dope book. I have your copy. You'll see it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I have your copy. But it's this. I love this project because first the name. It's titled Mirror.
Mirror, mirror on the wall. It's me again. I bet you already knew that. So just go ahead and show me my reflection today. But let me apologize in advance if it won't be the fairest of them all. I'm sorry if the perfect curve on my face won't show.
I titled it Mirror because I had a rough relationship with mirrors. Like I already told you, from 12 to 15. And so for a long time, I was like, I would get to the mirror and what I was looking at.
The esteem thing?
Yeah, what I was looking at, I would see this person that was not enough. I was like, maybe that's why whatever happened. I'll just be, I don't want to look at this image on the mirror because it will remind me of things I don't want to look at. Like for a long time, I was not looking at myself in the mirror. Wake up, wash my face, go on about with my activity. If I want to check how I look at my ID. I'm like, oh, so this is how I look. Go back. No mirrors. But now over time, and especially with the help of poetry, this image started changing. And also God started showing me who I am and why he called me and why he allow me to be in this universe. So my relationship started to shift to a point where right now I'm like, I have to look at myself in the mirror because I'm like, hey, this is a boss. This dude is handsome. This guy is going places and he's doing great things and he is worthy. So it was like just through this project, you get to experience my relationship from not wanting to look at a mirror and right now appreciating myself. Yeah. And at the back of the book, there's a quote that I love. It is my quote, by the way. You can mention me when you write it. It says, when I look at the mirror, all I see is flaws. But when I look into the mirror, all I see is a boss. That sums up the whole project.
God damn, you need to trademark that.
Hey, yo, I have the copyright. It's on my book.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Storm. Guys, you had it. When you go out to shop your mirrors, please make sure that, you know, you buy a mirror that gives you the curves in the right places. You know, like gives you a round face when you're a dog face. You know what I mean? But besides that, Storm, we really appreciate you making the time to come out, you know, like talk to us about your creative journey a little bit. And also, I appreciate the fact that, you know, your poetry is a form of outletting for you, is a form of healing. And I hope that, you know, like people out there can also start to adopt, you know, crafts that help them to self-heal and to appreciate self and you know, things of the sort.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. Do you have any parting shots before I close this off? And also, where can people access your work and the book and EP?
My socials, that's STOM_WABUKO. The project is everywhere. So Spotify, Apple Music, Boomplay, Deezer, you can get it everywhere. And just let's connect on social media.
DM
me and tell me where you're looking at my pictures from
and where we're using your
sounds and where you're using my quotes from. Just let me know. I think we are the generation to make Africa the one country, one continent. So let's connect. It doesn't matter where you're from, just reach out. Let's exchange ideas. Let's share. If you're down, my DM is always open.
What about the book?
The book, Amazon, it's also on Rafu Books. For East Africa, you can get it from Rafu Books. They deliver all over. Anywhere. Worldwide, working on Amazon. Mm. I'm working on putting it on Kindle. Mm. We had some issues with Amazon. I had to take the book down, but taking it back up.
Yeah.
So they'll be getting it there. But you can just DM me so that you make arrangements and let you know where you get it from.
Thank you, Storm. That was Storm Wabuko, ladies and gentlemen. His a very gifted creative. You guys should, I mean, we didn't have an opportunity to talk about his video work, but you guys should check out his video work. But thank you so much for taking the time to listen into Afromillennial, the podcast, a creative sound space where we basically just meet amazing people like Storm and get to tap into their creative journey. Mm. You know, what has groomed them, what has put them down, what lessons have they picked up, what would they do differently, what do they do when they're not working, which is, as far as Storm is concerned, visit kids in Juve. Which is, I think, a very, very inspiring thing. Send our love to the kids in the prison when you go there. Tell them, you know, life doesn't stop there. Life continues. Life goes on. If you have any feedback, any comments to share with us about the podcast, please don't forget to leave them with us at +256 709 970 970. And when you're done checking out Storm on all the socials, don't forget to also, Nitua, and check out Afromillennial on Facebook, on Instagram, on Twitter, on TikTok, and all those other spaces where you'd love to check out, you know, great, amazing stuff. Until next time, cheers. Thanks.